show, please welcome W. Kamau Bell.
Yeah! Thank you. Welcome to Kamau right now on KALW! And give it up for the band Soul Development! Soul Development, everybody. You're going to hear a lot more Soul Development later. They are way more talented than I need for a show. I appreciate them coming. Give it up for Soul Development, everybody. They're too good. They're too good. Tonight's show is in partnership with City Arts and Lectures, and we're broadcasting live from the North Theater here in San Francisco. This show is all about what is happening right now in the world, in the Bay, those listening on the radio, and those right here in our beautiful audience. And what's happening right now? It's day 63 of Trump's presidency! You're like, why'd you got to bring that up, sir? We left our houses so we wouldn't have to watch the news. Is this better? It's only been 63 days since Barack Obama was in office! Little more, still not good? Okay, we'll keep working on it. Sugar is delicious! All right, some diabetics, not with that one. We'll keep it moving. This show is about what's happening right now, and tonight we have some amazing guests on the show. Tonight, one of our guests is the founder of the Center for Media Justice, Malkia Cyril. Give Malkia a round of applause. We have New York Times bestselling author, Ayelet Waldman. Give it up for Ayelet, everybody. And my friend and one of SF Weekly's best comedians, Nato Green. Give it for Nato Green, everybody. And a little later on, I'm going to have an awkward talk with the mayor of Berkeley, California, the place where I live. Give it up for Jesse Aragin, everybody. This is not our first time we've talked to a mayor on Kamau Right Now. Some of you may remember we had the mayor of Oakland on before. Didn't go that well. Do you have a clip of that?
Here's what I feel like when I hear the word tequity. Like, I feel like there's people in Oakland who go, I haven't gotten equity yet, and now you're replacing it with tequity. You know what I'm saying? So what does tequity mean to you?
I mean, exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Huh?
Right? What you just said.
What did I say? Did I define tequity and not know it? Did I have a stroke? What's happening?
So hopefully tonight's conversation with Mayor Jesse will go a little bit better than that one. Good enough for Jesse for coming, even though that clip happened and it's in the world. I live in Berkeley. It's a home game. But if you have questions for anybody on the show, if you have questions specifically for the mayor of Berkeley, please, if you're in the audience, we have cards going around the room. If you're on Twitter, listening right now on KLW or on the internet, KLW.org, please put them on Twitter. Hashtag Kamau Now, KAMAUNOW. In fact, we have our social media team to help us with that. Give it up for Becca Hoekstra and Maya Janelle, everybody right over here to my left. Stage left, right. I don't ever remember how that works. How's it going over there?
It's going pretty good. I like to start off just kind of with things that are more positive. So I ask people, you know, what's making them feel grounded since this first few months of presidency has been absurd. So at Limo Massage messaged me saying, working with companies to promote wellness through massage for their employees, which sounds great. So I was like, hey, can we get in on this? And yeah, definitely yes, he says, we can work out something for you. So I don't know about you, Kamau, but I can really go for massage.
I like that, Becca. It's like you're kind of like asking for me, but really for you. I just feel like when you show up,
all of us, really.
Yeah, when you show up, like, hey, I'm right here, just like you said. Kamau, you look different than I expect. The glasses are the same, but everything else, that's good. I think we should all go together. We should all like show up, like all 20 of the Kamau Right Now team, like we're ready for our massages.
Well, no, this is Limo Mobile Massage, so he'll come to us.
A massage that comes to you?
Yeah.
That seems dirty for some reason.
Okay.
Like, it just seems a little naughty. Now my brain is doing things. All right, we're on the radio. Kamau, keep it moving. What's going on with you, Maya?
Hey, Kamau.
Hey.
So, we got a tweet. There's someone here tonight at Hipster Pit at the Norse starting to think those Hamilton tickets that bum on Bart sold me were fake.
Oh, that's amazing.
At Hipster Pit. Can I sing a little the story of tonight for you? Or
yeah, I know, yeah. I feel like we got to do something. I've only, like, listened to it in my car while we drop my kids off. I'm not that deep into Hamilton. You got any, Maya?
You know, I saw the original Broadway cast of Hamilton. I'll stop talking about this eventually.
I know. No, I was going to say, you bring it up in every conversation we have. Maya, what time are you going to be at the venue? You know I saw the original cast of Hamilton. Okay. Maya, did you see Get Out yet? No, but you know I saw the original cast of Hamilton. I just know I'm not going to waste my shot. That's a song, right?
Yeah.
And it's playing right near here, right?
Yeah.
We should just all go right now.
Let's go.
Like, just run at the door. Ah! Like, promoting equity. We feel like we should all be able to see it just because. And broadcast that on the radio. Us leaving here, storming. Do we have a mobile radio unit? Storming whatever theater it's in. And then whatever that is, that's the show. And then we get cut off at the end of the hour. And Matt Martin from KLW never lets us do a show again. I think that'd be a good way to end Kamau right now. Anything else we got over there, everybody? Also, get up for Jeremy Dalmas over here. We'll hear from him later. Jeremy Dalmas. Dressed like the substitute teacher who's cool. Like the tie and the leather jacket. I'm not like the other teachers. Now you're dressed like a cop who thinks he's undercover. He put on sunglasses. What? I just want some marijuana. What? I would like the weed that I like. You have the weed? We did our last Kamau Right Now on January 19th. It was the eve of the inauguration. To combat all those feelings, everybody in the audience got a donut. So, yes, we ate our feelings that night. We couldn't afford more donuts tonight. Tonight, we're just going to have to deal with our feelings. I have a phone that has news alerts. Everybody's got one of those. Like, you have a couple news sources you want alerted. And, like, up until Trump is in office, like, once or twice a day, bloop, some news. Bloop, a little more news. Now my phone looks like my mom won't stop bugging me. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, everyone's like, it's like my text from my mom. Why haven't you answered your phone? You still haven't answered your phone. Like, that's the news right now, is every moment. And they're all, the thing that's frustrating with all the news alerts on my phone, they're all some version of the same thing. Trump and his administration continue to be full of BS. That's exactly what it's saying, just over and over again. Thank you, three people, for clapping almost. I appreciate that. Nope, 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 nope. Nope, nope, nope. Not begging for that. But, no, it's funny. And then, I don't know if you guys heard, he did an interview, I think it was in Time magazine. I'm just going to read this off my phone. And he was being pressed as journalists. Even bad journalists are certainly better than they used to be right now. It's an amazing time. Even Fox News is like, hey, slow down, jerk. You know what I mean? It's just amazing. You can't just say whatever you want. Oh, my God, I can't believe I'm saying that. But Trump said to a journalist, I can't be doing so badly because I'm president and you're not. That's what an actual president of the United States said. That's an actual president. Not Josiah Bartlett from West Wing or some, you know. Not Morgan Freeman as the president. That's what an actual president. That will go down in history somewhere. Some kid will one day do that speech on President's Day. I can't be doing so badly because I'm the president and you're not. That's going to be in a commercial, like a McDonald's commercial. And then there was that day that the president said, I mean, even my five-year-old was like, that's pretty immature. You know what I mean? Like, that's really not a good look. My daughter, Sammy, she's 5 and a half, so she understands that that we have a new president. She knew that we wanted the lady before. Maybe I mean Jill Stein. I don't mean that. Jill Stein's like a stock you should have sold a long time ago. It's really, that didn't work out. Like, her stock was high. It was like, get out, get out. So we have the news on in my house because I try to pay attention to the world. And my daughter, this is how hip she is to everything. The news was on, Trump was on, and she goes, are they still trying to figure out why he's the president? Yes, Sammy, they are. Yes, they are. And you get to have ice cream for breakfast because that's... Dad is going to say that on stage. And if it gets a laugh, you get to have ice cream for breakfast tomorrow. Thank you. Now let's bring out our guest panel for Kamau Right Now. Let's get the show started. We've got some amazing guests to help us talk about what is going on with the world right now. my first guest is making their second appearance on Kamau right now in person, but also the fourth appearance if you count the number of times that they've been heard on the show, a poet and an activist and the founder and executive director of the Center for Media Justice and the co-founder of the Media Action Grassroots Network. We're honored to welcome one of the greatest people on planet Earth, Malkia Searle, everybody! Thank you, Mac. Thank you. This show is filled with people I'm not worthy to hang out with, but when you book it in a theater, they show up. My next guest is a New York Times best-selling author. Her latest book is called A Really Good Day, How Microdosing Made a Mega Difference in My Mood, My Marriage, and My Life. I don't have to say she lives in Berkeley. And she's talking about using LSD to cope, which a lot of us are using strategies to cope. That's a new one, everybody. We'll talk about that. Please welcome to stage, I Yell at Waldman, everybody. Thank you. Thank you. My last guest is also making his second appearance here on Kamau right now, although his third, because one time he was kind of my Jewish person in a glass case when we did a show at the JCC. We can talk about that later. He's a columnist for the San Francisco Examiner. He's been named San Francisco's best comedian by SF Weekly, Huffington Post, and CBS. Please welcome my good friend Nate O'Green, everybody.
Jew in a glass case.
I said Jewish person. I didn't say Jew in a glass case. That would not have been. See, now that's how it sounded. I said it right now, and it sounds bad.
I'm marketing Jewish terrariums from now on. It's my new startup.
So thank you, all three of you, for coming. I always like to start out by finding out what's going on with all of you individually right now. But before we get there, I have to ask Makia. You have become quite a recurring guest on the show.
Yeah.
I think we've told you. I think you know about it because of what you said on the very first Kamau right now about the mayor of Oakland, Louis Schaff, and the idea of techquity. Can we play the clip?
Mayor Schaff, you know, basically considered Oakland her parking lot, yes. You know. And she went around making her speech last night talking about this new term that she's coined called techquity. Oh. Techquity.
I think that makes you feel like I got touched in an inappropriate
exactly,
place.
Exactly, right? Do I need to go to the doctor now? Do I have techquity? What is
it? Do I have techquity?
I don't know.
That is like one of the greatest hits of Kamau right now is you saying, do I need to go to the doctor right now? Do I have techquity? So
I did feel sick afterwards, though, a little bit. You know?
So it's a year and a half since you were on the show. Do you have techquity yet?
I don't know. I've been trying to figure it out. I tried to look it up in the medical dictionary. I couldn't find it. You know what I'm saying? I've been looking for it, but I can't figure it out. But she's still on the hunt for it. So Google.
Yeah.
Uber, they all trying to come to, you know,
yeah,
Oakland.
They're all
she's
to
still
to...
looking for that techquity.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't know what it is yet.
Yeah.
Do y'all know what it is? Okay, well, when of y'all figure it out, can y'all holler at me?
At Culture Jedi on Twitter. Yes.
Yes, let me know, please.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So, if you have questions for one of our guests, let us know using the hashtag Kamau Now on Twitter or social media platforms. Well, what else is going on with you right now?
Okay, what's going on with me? Number one, I'm very angry today. Do I look angry because I'm black? It's not because I'm black. It's because the Senate is trying to repeal the ACA. Congress is trying to repeal the ACA, so I'm very angry. I think everybody shares that. Do you feel me? Yes. Right. So I
was saying, did
that.
The Google bus drop you all that. Off? Is that what happened? Yes.
You know, I'm also angry because at the same time, so tomorrow they're trying to repeal the ACA. Today, they repealed the broadband privacy rules that my organization fought very hard for last year and won, along with a coalition of people. So my question right now, and what I've been sitting with, I tried to meditate on it, is why are these white men so crazy? I don't understand.
I like the idea of you meditating on it.
I'm meditating
just,
on it.
Why are these white men so crazy?
I need to know. And I didn't come up with nothing. Buddha didn't speak to me.
Yeah. Buddha doesn't know either.
Mm-hmm.
Well, white people on the other end of this.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Somebody holler.
Look, holding down most of humanity is all we've got, really. We're kind of out of moves at this point, so we're grasping at straws. And This is our exit strategy.
Okay.
Brexit. We'll just hope the exit comes fast. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Some of us will survive.
I hope it's y'all two. I mean, at least y'all two stay with.
Oh, that's so you meant some of the white people will survive, is what you meant.
Yeah,
there.
Just
you
some
no,
of
us. No. I think the humanity. White
people
probably.
Oh, that's because I think Malkia thought you meant some of the white people.
Because yeah. I was like, just a few of y'all. Because you know, y'all been fucking stuff yeah. up. Y'all been messing stuff up for a long time. Messing stuff up for a minute. So just
right,
a
like in the
Jew
terrarium, you'd be like, remember we had these white people? And they ran amok for a long time.
You said the Jew terrarium. Don't do that. See, man, you try to catch the rest of us up. Don't do that, man.
Yeah, we're
I reject
just trying,
that. I reject that right
we're
there.
We're just trying to keep a simple race war thing alive, and you got to make it all Jewish.
Bringing it. Don't do
we're
that.
Just trying to
don't
black versus white, and you got
to
make...
Yeah, that's it.
Native. It's always
Native. Mm-hmm. Messing stuff up.
So I yell it.
Yes, sir.
Tell me about LSD.
Well... Right now, what I'm thinking about is there enough LSD extant in the United States to help us get through the next 4 to 8 years? That's really what, it's a balancing act, because you want to take enough, not so much LSD that you can't, like, get out there and protest, but you need to take enough so you don't go out of your goddamn mind every time you look at your phone. And I have not figured out, it's not a microdose, I'll tell you that much.
So yeah, I was going to say, not so much LSD that you try to fly to the protest.
Right. Yeah.
So that sounds dope, though.
Yeah. I mean, so you actually are microdosing on LSD? Is that? I just want to be clear about that.
No, I'm not, because that would be illegal, Jeff Sessions. I am not currently on any illegal
duly noted,
substance.
Duly noted. I know the NSA
nor
is listening because we're broadcasting
it. Nor do I encourage anyone
it.
To use LSD, despite the fact that I wrote an entire book talking about how great microdosing is. That is not to be construed of as me saying that one should go out and do LSD. But actually, yes, LSD is a... Oh, how am I going to say this and not get myself in trouble? LSD
I think you've gone too far already. You've got to lean into it.
Therapeutic in treating all sorts of things, including depression and anxiety, which is what I used it for, in small doses. It can be therapeutic in large doses, too. There's lots of research that shows that. But I took small doses because the inside of my place is a terrifying... The inside of my head is a terrifying place, and I didn't want to be there for the 10 hours a large dose would have demanded. So it's like an acid errand, not an acid trip. That's what I did.
An acid errand.
Yeah.
I need to run an acid errand. I'll be right back. So it's like listening to the first part of the Jefferson Airplane song, but not the whole thing.
Yeah, no okay. solos.
Yeah, just like through the first chorus.
And right, then you're out.
Okay. My wife would never... I'm like, that sounds good. I can hear why we're not microdosing on LSD in this house.
Do you remember when, didn't the CIA try to give LSD to Fidel Castro at some point?
They gave LSD to lots of people. In San Francisco, they set up this little fake brothel where they would lure guys in with sex, and then they would slip them LSD in their drinks and then watch through two-way mirrors and holes in the wall to see what happened, because they were trying to weaponize LSD to use against... You know, they thought it could be a truth serum or something that would make someone like Fidel Castro go crazy. And instead, they just watched a lot of poor sex addicts
and
go
like, this is fun.
Right. Okay.
Thanks for taking my addiction and turning it into a good time.
But that's how we got Gavin Newsom, right?
Oh, ouch. Oh, my God.
Once again.
NATO, keeping it real. So NATO, since it's your turn to keep it real, let's talk about what is going on with you right now. I hear that I'm about to get some on me.
You and I have a political disagreement, and I thought it would be a good podcast if we talked about it.
Good. Instead of just calling me up on the phone like friends do.
Yeah. We did talk on the phone the other day, and I was like, you know what? Let's not have this conversation now. Let's do it in front of 85 people.
Yes.
So,
you said specifically 85 people. We actually turned people away tonight, so you can have the right number.
It had to be the right number. So in the press coverage of you, one of the things that is regularly attributed to you is that you believe in the transformative power of difficult conversations.
You've probably put a little bit too much on it, but we can go with that.
And I don't.
Okay, yes.
So
you don't believe in the transformative power of difficult conversations?
So...
See, he's not answering. See how this works?
No, I did, no, I don't.
It's the way
so,
my mega kind of set up. I can't. Mm-hmm.
Not across the board. I think it's specific, which is to say, I think there are two circumstances where difficult conversations are transformative. One is if you have a relationship with a person, right? You and I are friends. We can have and have had difficult conversations. And
oh yes.
Yes, we have. You can pull my sleeve and say, Nato, this is what it's like for me. I want you to understand it, and I can hear it. I can pull your sleeve and say, Kamau, this is the burden of being an overwhelmingly brilliant Jewish man, and you have compassion for that.
If I had a dollar for every time he had that conversation with me.
Yeah. And then the other time is in the context of a political struggle for power. Like, I'm not interested in dialogue. I'm interested in power. I don't think that we have the social problems that we have because people don't have enough difficult conversations. I think we have the social problems that we have because oppressed people don't have enough political power.
Wait. So you're saying that if I was to chat with Donald Trump and be like, bruh, but my mom died of sickle cell and my wife has cancer and I'm black and I'm gay. And so if I was to tell him all of that, you say he wouldn't feel me?
That's what I'm
he
saying.
He wouldn't understand my struggle?
I'm 100% with Nate. Yeah, no, he would not feel you.
That's crazy.
I'm telling you.
He would say, he would take a picture with you. Look at me taking a picture with this.
I don't think he would, though.
This is my black lesbian I'm taking a picture with.
I think he would inch away,
He wouldn't shake your hand. No, he wouldn't shake your hand.
He wouldn't shake my hand.
But he'd, like, get you in the same picture so he could put it on. But he would not. No.
Okay.
He'd just be like, shoot, how do we get rid of that one?
And I don't think that necessarily, I mean, maybe you and I don't necessarily agree about that, but I think those horrible sellout liberal reporters like Terry Gross are putting this on you.
Wait a minute. That's a lot to unpack there.
So, no,
wow. Did Terry Gross refuse to have him on the show?
Dude, I'm going to do that show in 2 weeks.
Show?
Keep it down.
I think that there might be some press, you know, want that to be your argument. Like, they want, you know, like, oh, it's all we have to do is just have difficult conversations. Wait, let everybody out of jail. No, thank you. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I think the thing that we agree on, I think people think I say awkward conversation. Like, one awkward conversation with somebody is going to lead to a different place. And I don't think that's certainly not the case. And because I hear that all the time on Twitter and Facebook, people are like, come on, I tried. I talked to my dad, who's a racist, homophobic, anti-Semite, and we talked once for like 10 minutes, and it didn't work. I'm like, yeah, that's not how it works.
So wait, can I ask you a question? Do you think that that the problem is, like we've been hearing so much, that we just aren't going out to Trump country and talking to those poor, poor white people who've had their power taken away? And if we just heard what they had to say, they wouldn't be so angry and they wouldn't be so racist and they wouldn't be so Trumpy. Do you really believe that's true?
I don't want to encourage everybody to do that because then I don't have a TV show. So I don't want to encourage
that. But do you
that.
Really think that's
no,
going to make any
no,
difference?
No, well, first of all, I don't think you have to go to Trump country. I think there's people who are working with people every day in their offices that they're not having these conversations with.
No, I agree. That's
and,
true.
And,
do you think the conversation has power? I'm not saying that, I don't. I'm just wondering.
I think the conversation is power. I don't think the political disagreement is always where the conversation is, though.
But I think there's some differences here. One, we're talking about talking, but I think what we really mean is listening. Right?
Yes, yes.
Is that
right.
There are a lot of people in this country that haven't been listened to, and they need to be. Number two, the fact is we actually need to better understand white identity because white nationalism is running this country right now. So if we don't get it and we don't understand how it works, we're going to be kind of messed up. Number three, knowledge is not power. Whoever told you that was lying to you. Only power is power. And
Amen.
That's what I think you're talking about, right?
Right. And I'm... The perspective that I like, I'm the country's only semi-functional hybrid of comedian and union organizer. So like,
see, big head, man.
Yeah.
Telling you, he got a big head.
Like, so I think about it in the context of having organized workers to do stuff and being involved in organizing multiracial groups of workers where people can have those different conversations because they have a context to be involved in something together. I'm gonna go on strike to defend my health care, and I have to support these other people who are not like me.
That's right.
because our interests are aligned.
That's right.
It's not because they said the right thing or we had a moment of connection and we heard each other. It wasn't a conversation in the abstract. It was a conversation that was about moving people to change their conditions. And
basically what you're saying, you agree with me. Give it up for Nato Green, everybody. Nato Green, I yell at Waldman, Malkia.
Cyril, we'll be here for a minute, but if you just tuned in, I'm W. Kamau Bell, and I've been speaking with these three. This is Kamau Right Now on KALW, live from the Norse Theater in San Francisco. Soul development, everybody. I didn't say something right away because I just was enjoying the song. I don't know why they want me to talk so much. Don't you want to hear more soul development? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Well, because we'll still stick around. I like this band. This is what I'm talking about. I like all the bands on Kamau Right Now. And I like this one too. So the thing I've been thinking about, there's a few things I've been thinking about right now that have been going around. But the one that I want to focus on tonight is I hear a lot of people after the events of the past couple weeks with Trump and the wiretap, he's saying Obama wiretapped him in quotes, which we all know. Yeah. Which we all.
What that mean? He put some wires on him, he tapped on me. Come on, he didn't.
So there's all this, like, there's this thing about, like, you know, he wants to defund, like you said, he wants to repeal and replace Obamacare, but even moderate Republicans are like, hey, slow down, dude. But now I'm hearing, especially liberals and the left, talking about like impeachment, and like there's been things like Sean King posted a thing like that once Trump lied about wiretapping, that's an article of impeachment. So first of all, is it really the time to start? Is it too early to start talking about impeachment? Is my first question.
Funny you should say that, because okay. I'm hosting a little gathering at my house this weekend called Impeachment: Pipe Dream or Possibility. So there's two questions about impeachment that I can just tell you.
Yes.
There is whether he has committed impeachable offenses, and the answer to that is really simple. Yes, he has.
Good,
he
did. Good. I'm glad we got that out of the way.
There's no doubt.
Yeah.
The every time he takes money from a foreign government in one of his hotels, that's an impeachable offense. It's the emoluments clause that you guys have been hearing so much about. But the question I think that's really important is, can he be impeached? Not is he impeachable, but the fact is, you cannot impeach someone unless the House and Senate will impeach them. And are these weak-willed moral midgets in the House and Senate going to impeach him? No, they're not, because it's, you know, they're having all the fun in the world. Paul Ryan is not going to lead an impeachment.
That's for sure. No offense to little people, by the way. I also want to go over what an impeachment is. Because I think it's something that you sort of hear all the time, people were impeached, and I just want to read. This is according to what my producer wrote down, so I assume this is right. Impeachment means indictment, not removal from office. First, the House must vote to impeach, as Ayala said. The Senate then tries the case. They need 2/3 majority for removal from office. There have been 19 impeachment proceedings in the Senate, most of them for judges. Only two presidents have been impeached, Andrew Johnson in 1868, not guilty. William Jefferson Clinton in 1999, not guilty. Nixon, who I think most people think was impeached in 1974, was not actually impeached. The House passed an article of impeachment, but he resigned before it went to full House vote. No president has ever been removed from office due to impeachment. And I think that's just something that people don't. When you hear people talk about impeachment, they think it means, oh, he gets thrown in handcuffs and marched out of the Oval Office.
The other thing people are talking about is this Article 25 thing, that the Constitution provides for. You probably know this way better than I do.
Well, it would allow him to be removed from office by his, you know, this is for when the president becomes, say, incapacitated. Now, I think it's pretty clear that this president is profoundly mentally ill. Like, I'm not actually even joking around. He is a pathological narcissist. He's completely, you know, his lack of empathy. He has so little empathy that it achieves a moral mental illness, whatever that illness is. I'm not a therapist.
A little bit high on LSD, but we can keep going.
And I'm high on LSD. Not anymore, Attorney General Sessions. But that's, you know, you could, his cabinet could theoretically remove him under those circumstances. But, like, who are you going to look to do that? Who?
Yeah.
Who?
But also,
Betsy DeVos? I mean, who's going to do that?
I think that whether...
wake up, Ben Carson, impeach the president. Ben, open your eyes. Open your eyes.
Oh, my God.
I think whether Trump can be impeached or not is one set of issues that are being discussed. And I think they're important. And, you know, as it relates to political will, but also as it relates to the law, so on and so forth. But I think it's more important to answer this question. Can you impeach white supremacy? Because
Amen.
If you can't, then it does not matter if you impeach Donald Trump, because white supremacy will still be in the presidency. Active, not nascent white supremacy, not Hillary Clinton style white supremacy. I'm talking about aggressive, active, identity based white supremacy. So I don't know if it matters. I'm not sure, honestly, if it matters whether Donald Trump is in the office or not, because who then comes in after him?
Pence.
Right. So
now, I was under the impression that if it wasn't him, then it had to be Ava DuVernay. That's not how it works.
No, yeah. Well, I wish it was.
I thought that I was just.
You,
that's how we talk about it
you.
In my house.
I thought it was me.
I thought it had to go to a person on the complete other side of the political spectrum.
Oh, okay.
No,
well,
it just goes to Mike Pence. Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know enough about the machinations of that White House to know whether Mike Pence keeps Steve Bannon. I mean, I don't think things get much better, but I think they get a notch better. But I think what's more, I'm really focused on like what's left, what's left in 4 to 8 years. And I don't have any confidence this is going to be a 4-year presidency. I think this presidency will last as long as Trump can make money. I mean, that's what he's doing this for. I don't think there's any doubt that he's doing this to enrich himself. He didn't have as much money as we thought he had, and now he's making billions as his degenerate inbred offspring travel the world at taxpayer expense,
right,
soaking foreign governments for billions of dollars. And I think at some point...
Give it up for the inbred.
He will decide that he has enough money, and that's when the presidency will be over, whether that's in 4 years or 8 years or 12 years or 24 years, I don't know.
Or is there the possibility I think the other thing could happen too is that he realizes that the brand has been damaged by his presidency in a certain way, that like Ivanka's like, Macy's isn't selling my
Yeah,
things.
But Amazon is selling it in, in the billions, and Azerbaijan is perfectly happy to give him money. And like the brand is damaged in our little amongst progressives. Oh no, I'm not going to buy any more Ivanka shoes. But,
Well, I haven't bought any since he's been in office, so that's something.
I don't, with like that kind of like brazen, destructive white supremacy in the administration on full display and unleashed, like I don't think that there's any going back to normal politics, like the usual partisan
positive
politics,
white supremacy.
With where the white supremacists are somehow genteel as they, send the Japanese to be interned and whatever. Like
you don't even have to reach that far back. I mean, go to Clinton. I was a federal public defender during the worst of the war on drugs. I mean, the Clinton administration was a time of horrific violence against communities of color, particularly African American communities.
Right.
So,
but I still would rather have Bill Clinton be president than this maniac.
So I just think,
But I'm not an LSD Attorney General Sessions.
I don't think the institutions are going to save themselves. Like, I think either these people are going to tear the world apart, or we're going to overthrow the government. Like, there's no middle ground.
The latter is not going to happen. You think this country is going to overthrow the government?
I think.
Are you going to?
I'm working on it.
Yeah. Because I understand you're going on vacation. I understand you're heading out to London.
Look, how many great revolutions have been fomented from abroad?
And I have book tour in Italy.
Look,
so we're very busy.
If Ho Chi Minh could go to other countries to study and then come back,
You were doing a good job until I could,
Now he's Ho Chi Minh, though. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I love you, man.
I love you too.
But Nato, I want you to talk about the idea of government overthrow. Do you think that this country, that we have it in us to go into the streets and not come out of the streets, or the certain percentage of us?
Well, there is a number, and the number is 3.5%. Right? That there's been these studies. Erica Chenoweth is in Colorado has done these studies that when 3.5% of the population is engaged in sustained nonviolent resistance, the government collapses. So. That's the Women's March was 1%. The last biggest march before the Women's March was the Immigrant Rights Marches in 2006 against Sensenbrenner. If those two trends came together, it would be unstoppable.
Which
May 1st, why we need to shut out May Day.
May 1st, right. Let's get out there. and have those trends come together. We're working on it, right?
I am. So, you know, we were at the airport protests, and I can say that that was the only time I felt, I was in Washington for Women's March, and at the airport protests was the only time I felt like I had any sense of positivity about this country at all in recent events. But can I just say, like, after a few hours at the airport, I was like, gotta get home, the kids have school, so I gotta get... So, like, I, you know, got myself home, and I think it's not just getting out to protest, you have to stay out. And that's where I think this country, and I'm saying this country, maybe I just mean me, you know, with all the progressive will in the world, I'm still going to be like, oh, you know, my son has a report due, we all better get home and make sure he gets, you know, the printers working, or mm-hmm. It's just it takes being willing to sacrifice your life both metaphorically and literally, and I just don't think we as a nation have the will.
Well, maybe we don't as a nation. That might be true. My mom was a Black Panther, and you know, I grew up on her shoulders at protests, going to court every day.
Absolutely.
You know, and so I witnessed a group of people
who had that will.
Yeah. And I'm part of Black Lives Matter, and I'm witnessing people who have that will today.
Absolutely.
I believe that we can generate that will, but I think it's going to take more to sustain protests. I think organizing, which is
right.
Different. And I think it's going to take, a number of different strategies. And so if we can do that, which I believe we can, how can I be part of or be the offspring of someone who was not only part of that kind of a movement, but part of a movement that was absolutely destroyed.
Totally.
Right? Crushed. And still have that optimism. Right. And you don't, boo, come on now.
Well, I want to actually...
It's really hard in New Jersey.
It's part,
in
hold
1976,
this.
Summer camp was very stressful. And I never... No, but you know what? I really do believe that. Like, I believe that if this happens, it's going to be because of the young people of Black Lives Matter. I think that is the model. I mean, those are the people we have to look to lead. And you know... White people don't like following Black people, but that's what it's going to take, I think, to cause this revolution to happen. And
let's start today.
Yeah, and also, just to be clear...
I'm behind you.
Just to be clear, Black people don't always like being followed by white people either, but that's a whole other issue. It's time we check in with our social media desk. What's happening, Becca and Maya over there? Are we getting a lot of... We're talking a lot of things. You said the words white supremacy several times. I'm sure people love that.
We have some good questions. I wanted to start out with... this message from Shane Brody, who there's a little bit of backstory to this. So back in a couple months ago, there were those naked Trump statues all over San Francisco, and we talked about them on the show, and he called us out kind of for the way this joke was being played out, because he has a very similar body to like those statues. He self-identifies as a fat trans man and made some good points. So then we invited him to the show, and then he helped out even more in another discussion about like wedding dresses and trying to find wedding dresses that fit. So he sent us this message, and I thought it was pretty great. I got into Harvard Divinity School. I think that being on Mr. Bell's show is very helpful for my acceptance to the program. HDS is also waiving my tuition for the master's program. So anyway, thanks again. So congrats to getting into this school. That's super.
Wow.
Cool.
That's great.
Harvard Divinity School, and our show had something.
Yeah.
Here's the kind of person I am. I got into Harvard Divinity School. That's how I'm going to sell this. Call
can
my
ask,
mom. I got into
a
Harvard
about
Divinity
ben
School.
Carson, and I
okay.
Just, like, wait, I just was thinking. I like, you know, every other white progressive went to Get Out and was like, yeah, I loved it. And but Ben Carson sometimes reminds me, like, I wonder if there is not a old white lady inside. Ben Carson sometimes.
Like Miss Daisy or something?
Like maybe there's someone standing behind him stirring a teacup. It sometimes makes me wonder. I'm just asking.
Are you
I'm
sure
just
you're not on LSD
out.
Now before I answer this question?
Did you get an email from Ben Carson?
No, sorry.
No. She's
okay. I was just going off on a tangent.
I mentioned Ben Carson earlier. Sometimes, oh, okay. Sometimes when you're tripping, you're living in summer
yeah,
times.
Yeah, you have a set your tons of time
LSD.
Collapses.
Okay.
You know.
Okay, I got you.
No, I think he's just that way. What do we else we got? Becca?
Gonna toss it over to Maya.
Ben Carson, Dr. Ben, is definitely in the sunken place.
Can you explain the sunken place?
That's the Get Out reference. And
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, definitely.
I think so.
But back to white supremacy, and Ava DuVernay, who you mentioned, come out. I was a bit upset that
the wonderful documentary she produced, 13th, which our guest Malkia is,
yes,
is a part of, did not win.
That's where I know you from.
Did not win the Oscar. So, you know, I saw some tweets. 13th should have won an Oscar, and that's that on that.
That.
Yeah, wait a bleeping minute. Did 13th really not win an Oscar? So my students watched 13th. This is from at Caroline Crew. My students watched 13th for our class, and oh boy, were they mad it didn't win an Oscar. And at Jeff W. Marker, no, I am not over the OJ doc beating I Am Not Your Negro and 13th for the Oscar.
So Mac, you were in 13th. It's who here has seen 13th, the documentary on Netflix about mass incarceration and how America is the sunken place? What you also feel like you had some feelings about 13th not winning an Oscar?
Okay, let me be real. Can I be real with y'all? Because
it's a
you mean it hasn't
space.
Been real yet?
I'm about to get deeply real.
Okay, just don't get profane. Be real.
I'm not gonna be profane.
Don't be FCC profane. You can be you can be profane, but
well, I'm queer, so I'm kind of profane as it is.
There
you know
we
what
go.
I mean? But you know, I feel like this. The OJ documentary. It was a television show. Why did it win an Oscar, man?
Yeah.
And it was good. I'm not even trying to say it wasn't good.
Yeah.
But it was a TV show.
It was
13th.
It was a 7.5 hour television documentary
series
that they put
this
in the theater
was not,
for.
This was the Oscars, man, for films. Films. Movies. Not TV show. That's a whole different awards show.
Now to be fair, I hear what you're saying, but to be fair, most people saw 13th on their computers. They didn't see it in the theater.
It was a movie, though.
Well, wait. It was two hours, right?
She
could have done 7.5 hours, for sure.
Yes.
She could have done 7.5 hours about mass incarceration and, you know, institutional racism. And then maybe it would have been as in-depth, say, as the 7.5 hour OJ show.
Mac, I love how upset you are about the rules of the
Academy.
The rules of the Academy must stand.
Yeah, I really appreciate that you're policing the genre distinctions.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes,
but what about I Am Not Your Negro?
How I Am Not Your Negro was gorgeous. It was amazing.
It was gorgeous
and
amazing.
It was outstanding.
If
but
you
I wasn't
had to choose,
in that movie.
Oh, right. So that.
So that's what I feel like.
There's
a little
that.
Bit in here. Just a, I mean, I believe you.
Keep it
a,
real.
A little
I
bit in here is.
I Am Not Your Negro.
You would have been an Academy. You're an Academy Award-winning movie. That's a little bit in there.
And I just have to say this. Ava DuVernay, a black woman winning an Oscar for director, would have been out. It would have been unprecedented.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted it to win because I want black women to win. All the time.
And also...
That's that.
And also, you were in it.
And I want to win. Where's my Oscar? This is what we're really talking about here.
Give it up for our guests, everybody. Malkia Searle, Nato Green, Ayelet Waldman, and the Kamau Right Now social media desk. Now it's time for a little more music. Give it up for Soul Development!
Yeah. Just another sunny day in Northern California. Watch where you going, and people might run up on you. And I ain't talking about the gang that bang red and blue. Talking about the boys in blue who hate them things right at you. My mama asked me, keep my hands at 10 and 2. From a grown man, whipping with that B-boy cool. Plus, I know my rights, and I graduated school. But them lights don't blind me when they flashing me in my rear view. Cause no such thing as a routine traffic stop. It's California, in the land of the cookie cops. Need I remind you that they fired more than 50 shots on one block? How many innocent bodies will they drop? Sad to say we may never know the answer. We need a cure for cops like we need a cure for cancer. Cause both is killing black males at alarming rates. Nowhere is safe anywhere in these 50 states.
Sunny days, St. Cali never rains. It never rains. We're cold cause it's old. They say summer brings showers.
Cook the coppers for the truth, they down to plant lies.
But I'm true to my roots. So when that lies, Mark is gonna be teaching Julie P about my black pride, black fist to the black skies for all my fallen soldiers. The detectives could arrest us, but never could they control us. Knock me off my deep, they hoping I lose my focus. But I'm carrying my cross. Who will Babylon notice? I'm the son of God, not the Messiah in the flesh. But I follow in his steps. This life ain't easy, so I know this is my test. They crucify the truth, but yo, I'm here to resurrect, protect. I bring it to your neck, I spit the truth and nothing less. Yo, I'm Sun Tzu, and some Tzu they built for couldn't take me. Don't trust the government, police the schools, how could you blame me? They say the best things in life are free, that's liberation. So it's no wonder why they all about incarceration.
Biggest gun has the power.
Soul development. Soul development, everybody. Again, I'm W. Kamau Bell, and this is Kamau Right Now, and we're live on KALW in partnership with City Arts and Lectures. And since this is Kamau Right Now, let's check in with the people here at the Norse Theater in San Francisco. Please welcome our audience emissary, Jeremy Dalmas, everybody.
Hello, Kamau. Hello, everyone in the audience. How are you all doing? We had a lot of people reacting to Trump. No surprise there. Yep. Someone even said that their cat was diagnosed with high blood pressure after Trump got inaugurated.
Oh,
so
good Lord.
Just humans.
You've got that good pet insurance if you're going to let that happen.
And also, whenever you ask what's going on with you right now, some people talk about this space right here. Someone said that they love the bathrooms. I haven't seen them, but Robert and SF recommends them.
That's important. It's good to know where the good bathrooms are.
But CC Hart in San Francisco had one I was really excited about. I'm organizing a synesthesia conference with people who see music, taste words, and feel colors on their skin. I think we should talk with CC about this conference.
CC, where are you? Can we talk to you, CC? So where are you, CC? Where?
In all back. The way in back.
Bring CC a microphone. CC, come to give it up for CC, everybody.
Hi there.
CC, synesthesia.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a new word that I didn't have in my vocabulary. Thank you for making me smarter. So tell me what's happening.
Yeah, so synesthesia is a condition that actually about 3% of the population has. And people with synesthesia have their senses conflated in their brain. And so you might, if you have synesthesia, someone like Pharrell Williams, when he hears music, he sees color. And some people with synesthesia taste words. And so the name Kamau might taste like key lime pie.
Oh, sweet and tart. I like it already.
Yeah.
That's how I imagine myself. That Kamau's got a little kick.
And the thing that makes synesthesia really interesting right now is that with studies like functional MRIs, you can see that the brains of people with synesthesia work a little differently than the people who don't have synesthesia. Scientists, as they study more about synesthesia, it helps them understand how all of our brains work. And so I'm pretty excited about putting the conference on. The organization is headquartered here in San Francisco. We're doing most of our conference down in LA. And just for what it's worth, I am a synesthete. I have what's called mirror touch. So I feel like I'm holding those papers in my hand, and when you do that with your forearm, I feel like I'm doing that.
Sorry.
Yeah.
my bad.
And guess what, Kamau? I'm actually not on LSD.
You get it the old-fashioned way. Your brain does it.
My brain does it for me, sure.
Give it up for Cece, everybody. That's why I love this show. Like, we just learned telepathy. A bunch of stuff. Cece, do you do like radio and public speaking and stuff?
I do actually. I was.
Yeah, because you sound like you're on radio. I mean, you are on radio, but you also sounded like you know how to do this. Is what I'm saying.
I used to teach high school theater, which was really a lovely treat to be around a lot of young creative people. But I was actually interviewed just a couple of weeks ago by CNN for their Great Big Story project.
I've heard of CNN.
Yeah,
they do some good things in recent times.
I'm the current fake news. There's
I resemble that remark.
They do a really lovely human interest program called Great Big Story.
See, and now I'm afraid that one of my bosses at CNN snuck you in here, CC. It was all...
I came just for you because most of the time when I'm in my car, I'm listening to Kamau Right Now in my car, and I'm like, yeah! So I'm driving down the street, and people think I'm crazy, and so...
That's all right. And I thank you. Give it up for CeCe, everybody.
Thank you so much for sharing with us, CeCe.
I will be more careful about how I hold the cards now and what I do with my arms. Thanks, Jeremy, and thank you to all of you out there. In the after party, we will get to more of your comments. We have a lot of great things coming in. But right now, and also on Twitter, use the hashtag KamauNow, KamauNow, and we'll do some more of the questions and comments and Twitter stuff in the after party. But right now, it's time for my favorite part of the show.
Talk with W. Kamau Bell.
I'll give it up for Soul Development. They just keep becoming my favorite band every time a song gets played. Yeah. This is the part of the show where we get into some of the things that we don't always feel comfortable talking about, like every single news item every single day. My guest tonight certainly knows about awkward news stories, and because it's the Bay, he rode BART to be here because he keeps it real. He's the first Latino mayor in Berkeley history and the youngest at 32. Please welcome Mayor Jesse Aragin, everybody. Thank you for coming, Mayor.
Thank you.
I just like calling people mayor when they are the mayor. Normally when I say that, I'm being sarcastic.
I'd love to call you mayor someday.
Oh, I'd love you not to do that, actually. I've seen your Twitter feed. That doesn't look like a lot of fun.
It's intense.
So, first of all, just talk about, there's a lot of things we can talk about. We met briefly at a Solidarity Sunday. I don't know if you guys know about Solidarity Sunday. It's these organizations. Kate Schatz and other women started it. And we met at a Solidarity Sunday in Berkeley. And I was like, oh, the mayor's here. And then you were like, oh, Kamau's here. And then ever since then, we've been like Ocean's 11 hanging out together. But the thing that was interesting is that I voted for you. And I got to be honest, because the websites that I go told me to vote for you. I was like, oh, this is where they're telling me to vote for, progressive mayor in Berkeley. So I tweeted this picture out of me and Berkeley's new mayor, and I got a lot of pushback. And I was like, man, what's it like to be you? Like, what is it like to have wanted to be the mayor of Berkeley and to now then be the mayor of Berkeley? Especially during the era of Trump, when being mayor of Berkeley means something different.
Well, it's really exciting, and I think it's all the more important that Berkeley really be a leader in the resistance against the Trump administration. And we've been doing that. This past Tuesday, we became the first city in the country to divest from companies that intend to build the president's divisive boondoggle border wall. And I think that shows things that cities can really do to use our power to send a message to Washington that we're not going to support the racist, xenophobic, divisive policies that are being put forward in Washington. So it's an enormous amount of responsibility right now, more than ever, with everything happening in Washington and making sure we can really, really move to the left in Berkeley.
Well, I appreciate that because I live in Berkeley, so it's important to me that it's on the left. Even if so, the thing that I also want to talk to you about is when I talked to you at the party, I said I really think there's something about the mayor of Berkeley that could be like a national position, the way that mayor of New York is or mayor of Chicago. It's like certain mayorships are seen as like representative of the country. And we talked about it for a minute. I was like, I just feel like it could be something that people should know who the mayor of Berkeley is. And then a couple weeks later, you determined that was going to happen. I don't know if you did it on purpose, but the Milo situation happened.
Yeah.
Where Milo, Yana, not being disrespectful to Greek people, I'm being disrespectful to Milo. So Milo was going to come to Berkeley and speak, and you, before it happened, you tweeted this out. Using speech to silence marginalized communities and promote bigotry is unacceptable. Hate speech isn't welcome in our community.
Yes.
Yes.
And little did we know.
Little did we know what that would lead. What would happen after that is what I should say. So then Milo shows up. People show up. Protest shows up. And then we have this happen. Berkeley mayor receives death threats for white nationalist tweet. So you had a tweet that went up where you said you referred to him as a white nationalist. And you got a lot of pushback on that.
Yes.
And then it's Berkeley mayor speaker who sparked protest, a white nationalist. So you got pushback for that. You deleted the tweet, right? Is that correct?
I said that maybe we shouldn't have used labels.
Okay.
But, you know, if I was really being honest.
Yes.
I would say he's not a white nationalist. He's a white supremacist, to be honest.
Okay. You took one step further. Yes. Yeah.
I didn't want to inflame things even more because the amount of hate mail that we got and phone calls that we got were really overwhelming and surprising, but to the point we had to have a police detail because the police were concerned about my safety. I think being a brown leader at this time, especially when Trump has made very hateful comments about Latinos and immigrants, yeah. I think probably incites that kind of a response. So, but we're not going to be silent.
Well, that's the thing, because I think what happened, I saw what happened, is that people who were like, yay, the mayor of Berkeley called him a white nationalist. They're like, oh, he apologized for calling him a white nationalist because later you apologized. And then I felt like you were in this weird position where it was like, you can't do anything. And I sort of was like, can't we just call a white nationalist a white nationalist? You know, it's, you know.
He's a white nationalist.
All right, there we go. So, but what do you think the role of you, because there's the big issues of Berkeley being the leftmost leading place in the country, and there's the small issues of Berkeley being a place where people are really, like, struggling, you yes. know? Like, I live in downtown Berkeley, and I've seen, and this, I mean, you are on the city council, so it's all sort of under your purview, but I saw something, I'm seeing, like, buildings go up, and it says luxury apartments. I'm like, luxury? In Berkeley?
Yeah.
I mean, Berkeley? And it's in downtown Berkeley where there's a lot of people who can't afford luxuries.
Yes.
How does Berkeley still be a friendly place? Because let's be honest, the people who keep places left and leaning and progressive are the people who can't afford luxuries.
That's
true. You know
what
I'm saying?
Well, that's one of the reasons why I ran for mayor, is because I'm concerned about making sure that Berkeley remain at the forefront of progressive leadership and we're an equitable, inclusive community. We see more and more people on our streets. We are seeing a displacement of families. And we're already hard at work to not only work to address homelessness in our community, but also to create housing options for people that are affordable at all income levels. Because just because you live in a certain geographic area or the amount of income you make shouldn't define whether or not you're part of this community or whether you're a citizen of this community or not, of this country or not. So we really want to make sure that Berkeley is a community that is really inclusive and really that's truly equitable. And we have really two Berkeleys.
Yes.
And we need to break down those barriers and really unite our community.
Okay, I agree with you. I feel like the other thing I want to ask you before we go, because we're wrapping up or we're about to go into the people are just going to hear us cut off. How do you deal with the fact that as an activist, you are a progressive, but it's really hard to take up progressive space once you are a politician?
It's
and
tough.
That's what I see people, activists, accusing you of not being progressive enough as a politician.
I learned being an activist going into the system that it takes time to make change happen. But you got to be patient, and you got to be inclusive, and you got to build coalitions. And the statement that was made earlier is that the only way we're going to really change this country is not just by demonstrating, but by doing the organizing, the sustained organizing. And I think that's a role that I play as a public official and also as a political activist, to make sure that we are not just making change happen within the system, but also outside the system. So you got to be patient.
Yeah.
Got to be persistent.
Yes.
You got to keep pushing.
May Day is coming up. Do you have a plan to support May Day and let people who work in non-essential areas in Berkeley not go to work that day?
We welcome everyone's right to peacefully assemble, and that's something we want to respect. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of activism around immigration particularly. We are a sanctuary city. We're going to remain a sanctuary city. Even though they may cut $12 million in federal grants, we can't get bought off that cheaply.
Thank you, Mayor Jesse. Thank I appreciate you. It. Give it up for Mayor Jesse R. Green, everybody. That's come out right now. That's our show. I want to thank our wonderful guests once again, Malkia Searle, Nate O'Green, and Ayelet Waldman, and the Mayor of Berkeley, Jesse R. Green. Thank you to City Arts and Lectures for their support and letting us play in their house. Thanks to the lovely Norse Theater in San Francisco. The Come Out Right Now team is Ted Muldoon, Dan Brandon, James Rollins, Maya Janelle, Jeremy Dalmas, Becca Hoekstra, Phil Circus, Max Jacobs, special thanks to Dan Roth, and Matt Martin! Music by Soul Development over here! Come Out Right Now is a production of KALW. For those in the audience, stay with us. We've got more coming up. If you're on the radio, you can catch the rest on the podcast. So go subscribe to Come Out Right Now. I'm W. Kamau Bell. Thank you so much, and good night!